gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and as always, this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Boy, what a week. We've got a number of things to talk about tonight, but I think the best to start out with was the Nothing Fancy Farm event that happened yesterday. Nothing Fancy Farm was started, I guess, 3 years ago. I believe it was 2011. And it was started kind of in response to the way, or in reaction to the way, Fancy Farm is run. Now, those of you that have never been to Fancy Farm, it's a pretty, I don't want to say controlled environment, but it's very much all about the politicians speaking and not necessarily about the people. And so Nothing Fancy Farm was kind of created to do the opposite, to make it about the people and not about the politicians. So the first 2011, I was running for office, and I wasn't invited to speak at Fancy Farm. I got to speak at Nothing Fancy Farm. There were 17 candidates on the ballot, and they felt that there was enough time to allow 16 to speak. Obviously, that my request for even just as few as a minute or 2 minutes was too much. And so, as a result, I was unable to speak at Fancy Farm as a candidate, but I was able to speak at Nothing Fancy Farm. Some of the early on things that happened, the politicians, if you wanted to come, the politicians were put to work. And I thought that was always kind of a cool thing. Now, we did that tradition unfortunately hasn't continued, but I still do help out, and I still, well, now that I'm not a politician as far as running for office, I've kind of taken over or been in charge of running the grill. And so I grilled at least one round of hot dogs yesterday. Some other folks grilled some too. It's a fun event. And if you've never been, I recommend trying to get there next year. It's, I believe, usually the third week in August is when that is. It's the third Saturday. Because Fancy Farm's the first Saturday, and I believe it's 2 weeks after that, generally speaking. Lots of good liberty-minded people there. Lots of just generic people. It's an open event. It's a potluck event. It's really, really fun. And we had a great time. And, one of the cool things there, that was actually the first place in 2011 that I met Thomas Massey. And got to talk to him. This is when he was just a judge exec, didn't have any plans for running for Congress. And we talked a lot, found that he's a very good person. And I knew that when he ran for Congress, he would do well for us if he was to get in. And as I've told him on numerous occasions, he has yet to disappoint me. He's been doing a great job up there. And I see we have a caller in the queue, and I don't know if you want to talk or not. I can't really tell, so I'm going to hold on before I get to you because I don't know if you want to talk. But essentially, Nothing Fancy Farm was a good event. Massey was there again. He's been all 3 years, which is great. Also, who came to the event, other than Matt Bevin, the Republican challenger to Mitch McConnell, and Harvey Martin, who is also a Republican challenger. Less publication about Kirby Martin, but he is a challenger as well to Mitch McConnell in the Republican primary, U.S. Senate, or at least declared as such. And then there were also some other notables there. Mike Harmon was there. He is a representative that ran with Phil Moffitt in 2011 in his unsuccessful bid for the primary. For the Republican nomination for governor, lieutenant governor. He was the lieutenant governor end. And so it was good to see Mike. He's a really good guy as well. John Kemper, filmmaker extraordinaire, as I like to call him. He's always doing something to do something to stir things up. Big Mike, as we know him, Michael Johnston, he gave a great speech on the condition of inner city. And, really, really good. Thankfully, there was a lot of people with video cameras there. A lot of people were recording the event. I'm very excited to see. I gave a quick speech, and it really, some of the speeches went on a long time, and some of them needed to. I was there just kind of to rally troops, if you will, or to kind of rah-rah things, and nothing super exciting there. The other person who was at the event was David Peterson. Now, David Peterson, or not David Peterson, David Patterson, sorry. I had something else on my mind. David Patterson was there, and David Patterson had previously served as the Libertarian Party's vice chair here in Kentucky, and he resigned on Friday and announced his candidacy for U.S. Senate as a Libertarian. So he is seeking the Libertarian nomination, and that was the first event at which he had spoken. And he chose Nothing Fancy Farm to announce, and hopefully we'll see media about that. Things are just kind of spinning up in his campaign, and I'm sure, and we talked about this before, I'd love to get all the candidates, invite all the candidates to come on to the show in the future and talk to them and find out where they stand on issues so that you, the listeners, can decide, no matter what your political affiliation, who you want to back. And I think that would be a good service to you guys who listen every week and for those that tune into the podcast to know who we have in here. So anyway, I'm going to bring this caller on, and I don't know if they're trying to come on, but I'm hoping they do. Caller, you're on the air. Hello, are you there?
Hello. I'm sorry, I didn't press number one, so I didn't expect to be speaking.
That's all right, and if you don't want to speak, I'll put you back in. Blog Talk Radio acts crazy, so I can never tell. Some people press one, and then it doesn't show up, and I can tell. So if you want to just listen,
oh, well,
come back, and if you...
Well, I dialed in because I saw David Patterson posted on Facebook that he was going to be on the show. Was that this week or next week, or when's that going to be? What do you know about that?
I will let you know. I honestly am not sure whether he plans to join us tonight or not. Nothing's really been prearranged. I mean, obviously anybody can call the show. So,
okay. Well, it's actually I hadn't heard of you until he posted that, so this is my first time listening and first time calling.
Oh, hey, like I said, I apologize. The Blog Talk Radio interface is screwy on my end, and so when someone calls in, you can absolutely call in and listen, and sometimes we do that, but the last couple of weeks this thing's been broken, so I apologize.
Okay.
But hopefully if it is listening or has time, he's always welcome to call in, as is anyone. I mean, you know, this is not a closed forum by any means, so... I'll put you back in the queue. You can just sit there, and if
cool.
you talk, just hit one. And for that matter, I should mention, since we're on that topic, folks, I'd like to call in tonight. The number here is area code 858-683-1326. That's 858-683-1326. And, again, you can press one. Blog Talk might tell me that you want to talk, or it might not. Can never really tell, unfortunately, but that's just how we roll, I guess. We'll have to deal with that. One of the other things that I generally like to start the show out with, and actually kind of forgot all about it, getting talking about Nothing Fancy Farm, is our random political rhetoric generator. And so my randomly generated political rhetoric is, know this, that I believe in our cop shows, our big box retail stores, and our cherished national parks. That's your random political randomly generated political rhetoric for the night. One of the big things going around right now, there's a few stories that have come out about the swing in American politics towards libertarianism. And I think that, correctly, most of these stories focus around the events we now know about the NSA spying on the American people and how there's more and more people kind of waking up to exactly what's going on. And that seems to have awakened kind of a, I want to say a pure libertarian, but a libertarian-minded movement in America away from government spying on us. And there's already been other organizations like the Tea Party been concerned about the fiscal side of things. But this is a much broader thing. I think there's a large movement involved here. And in fact, that was what I talked about yesterday at Nothing Fancy Farm, was that we are seeing change. We are seeing that a liberty movement is occurring, that we are seeing things move our way. I use the voter registration here in Kentucky as an example, but there's lots of signs of that we're moving the right way. I mean, 5 years ago, you wouldn't have seen libertarian anywhere in the media. And now it seems like every other political story is talking about, well, what do the libertarians think about this? I think that's a good thing. I think that we're making our voices heard, and I think we are positively impacting politics. I mean, we're seven votes away from reeling the NFA's most massive, most invasive program, just reeling it completely in. And that would have been huge. And, I mean, honestly, even 2 years ago, I don't think that the vote would have even been close to what it was. That was very, very close. And the point is that we're making progress, and we, the liberty-minded people out there, have the momentum. We have the political momentum. And those that study politics will tell you, politics is a momentum game. And we have that momentum. The key thing right now is keeping that momentum. Now, it can be very difficult at times to keep that momentum. Most of us out here are not being paid to do this. Unlike our political opponents, who profit from the system, we're out here as volunteers, and we're doing everything that we can to move things in the right direction, not because we're going to gain financially. I mean, you can make the argument that over the long term, lower taxes, I'll save some money, but that's not really why most liberty activists are liberty activists. Liberty activists are involved because they believe that it's the right thing to do, and we don't get paid, typically, and as a result, it's a very impassioned it's a very impassioned movement, and I think it's a really good thing. We're seeing articles in traditional media about libertarianism, and they're doing in-depth interviews of people in the movement that have been in the movement for a long time. There's really a lot of talk about libertarianism. And again, I think that there's several factors involved. You've got the NSA that's spying on every American, and that's not cool. And everybody knows that's not cool. You've got the joke that they keep trying to tell us that the recession's over, when everyone knows it's not over. And you can look at the statistics, and we will hear in a bit, look at the statistics, and we know it's not over. We can look at government in general. When people are screaming out right now, the majority of Americans don't want Obamacare to go. They don't want it to go. Yet, even those who purport to be against Obamacare don't have the fortitude to actually stop it. For years, I've been calling to defund Obamacare, that if you really oppose Obamacare, then defund it. And 2 years ago, had they defunded the program, we wouldn't be where we're at now. We're literally kind of a last-minute, 11th-hour attempt to defund it when parts of it have already been implemented. Money's been expended already. We should have cut this off at the pass 2 years ago if you were really serious about stopping implementation of Obamacare. And, Bashir came out this week, and without directly naming him by name, David Adams, who has the lawsuit against the implementation of the exchange here in Kentucky, Bashir said, hey, it's the law, and those people that are still complaining about it should just get over it. Well, whatever. It's not – it's the law, but it's something that we shouldn't just roll over and take. It's going to be very, very expensive, especially for the state after the first few years. Medicaid expansion is going to be very expensive over the long term. And not to say that doing nothing is the right answer, but the problem is the way this is framed. And you have to look at what's wrong with healthcare to really get an understanding of what's wrong. The problem in healthcare, the two primary things wrong in healthcare. Number one, the regulations. There was a study, and we talked about this on the show a few weeks ago. There was a study that showed that the more regulations there are, higher the cost of business. I mean, people have been talking about this for years, but somebody finally got around to actually doing a study and prove it. And so they did. And so now there's a study that proves that higher regulations mean higher costs, which is common sense. And if there's more stuff, more hoops you have to jump through, well, that's more hoop jumping and less working. Right? I mean, it's pretty straightforward. The other piece of it is the litigation piece. Now, it's funny because some of the litigation is legitimate, right? Some of it is, if there's gross negligence, I mean, at the hospital, like, you know, you've got a chart, it says this guy's allergic to this medicine, and they give you that medicine, dude, that ain't cool, right? I mean, that's, it was on the chart for a reason. But simultaneously, you know, when someone goes into surgery, surgery has risks. All surgeries have risks. And if you die as a result from surgery, well, you know, I'm sorry, that was part of the risk. So there's a difference between gross negligence and acceptable risk, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. And so when you have these litigation factors added in as well, you have costs that are pushed by regulations, and you have costs that are driven by litigation. And the litigation costs, I think, are a place that could be capped. I'm kind of cautious there, only because I don't want to – I understand litigation is actually a good thing in a philosophical 10,000-foot view. Litigation is accountability. If I go to the hospital and, you know, I'm there to, I don't know, get a tetanus shot, and they cut off my leg just because of, you know, a complete paperwork mishap, well, that's kind of a big deal. And if there's no incentive to not pay attention to those details, they give me the medicine that kills me, right, even though it's on my chart. Don't give him this. It'll kill him. And they give you that medicine, you die. There's reasons to have litigation, right? It causes the business to have to do their due diligence. The business also balances that against their books, right? They know that they have diligence they need to do, but that these are the things that are acceptable and these are the things that aren't acceptable as far as, you know, how much craziness do you have to have involved. You don't need 27 surgeons in every operating room talking over each other and arguing over what to do next. That's not going to be conducive to anything. The point is that litigation can be good, but litigation can also be bad. Litigation that is, and especially when it comes to healthcare, you know, bad things happen. I had a friend of mine die after having laparoscopic surgery to have his gallbladder removed. I had a friend of mine die having his jaw readjusted for sleep apnea. I mean, it's horrible. And I, you know, I'm still sad about losing those friends. I don't think there's any way you can legitimately sue the people that did the work because there's a risk involved in any surgery. You know, in the one case, they nicked something. Obviously, he bled out internally. I mean, hey, man, when you cut into somebody, that's part of the risk, and especially with laparoscopic where they just do the three holes and they send instruments in. And in the case of my friend with the jaw, it was simply a matter of a bad reaction to anesthetics. I mean, that's something that happens, you know, and if you don't know that somebody's allergic to that anesthetic or sensitive to that anesthetic, well, you're just not going to know. So as sad as those situations are, those are not a case to be suing over. But, you know, if I go into the hospital, like I said, and they give me a medicine that says on my chart, do not give this medicine, it'll kill them, and they get you and you die, well, yeah, you know, you probably should be allowed to sue them for gross negligence in that scenario. If you want to reduce healthcare costs, there's several other things here in Kentucky as well. One thing in particular in Kentucky that would help is getting rid of the Certificate of Need program. In the state of Kentucky, we have a certificate of need program that basically does is for a given number of geographic miles and number of people, there could only be a certain number of hospital beds. The idea is to intentionally limit competition in the healthcare market. Now, limiting competition always raises prices, because you take away some of that incentive to find ways that are cheaper and still safe to do. And again, that's all balanced against litigation and whatnot. But if there's no reason to do it cheaper, if there's no competitor, then where else are you going to go? I mean, are you going to drive 100 miles to the next hospital? In the state of Kentucky, I live in northern Kentucky, as regular listeners know. The hospital chain up here now owns everything up here. They own the doctor's offices. They own everything. So if I want to go away from that provider for whatever reason, then I don't. But if I did, I'd have to drive to Mason County, which is 45 minutes or so south of me. I'd have to drive to Lexington, which is about an hour or so south of me. This is not reasonable. And so let's say there's a problem with this particular hospital chain. And there's not, so don't get me wrong. But if there were, you've limited the choices, the reasonable choices that we would have, which then, of course, brings on the calls for more regulation, which then in turn raises prices more. So if we would just allow competition to help set these checks and balances with litigation on over here on the side, legitimate legislation or litigation over here on the side, you would actually have a nice little balance. And over time, what we've seen is that there's more regulation and less competition in the healthcare marketplace. At least up here in northern Kentucky, where we used to have, what, four different hospital chains, I think? There were four hospitals up here, and now there's one. We used to have tons of private doctor's offices, but they all have to fold into the big hospital because they all have to do the e-record stuff, and that's impossible to do as a private company. I mean, you can't afford that expense. And now I see we have other people in the queue, and it looks like somebody's actually wanting to talk. I'm half tempted to just pick up, but we're at the bottom of the hour anyway. So I'm going to talk to the person who appears to want to talk in the queue at the bottom of the hour and make sure that they want to talk because that we don't want to have that again. But my point is this. There are a lot of problems with healthcare. There absolutely are. But the solution is not more regulation. The solution is not less free market. Those are the things that we've lost over time. We've lost the free market. We've gained regulation through time. And that is, in part, what has driven up our costs. That's the problem we have, is that when government puts a policy into place and it fails, the answer from a lot of people is, oh, well, we just need more government to fix the government that we broke before. And we keep compounding this and compounding this. And somehow, I always like to point out, you know, HMOs were created in the 70s by Ted Kennedy. And yet, by the late 90s, Ted Kennedy was condemning HMOs as the worst thing ever. Well, dude, you were the one that made them. But the funniest thing, you can't admit, oh, well, whoops, we shouldn't have done that. We made those. That's a bad mistake. No, we need to add more government to correct the government that we created before, supposed to create the government we created before, which was supposed to create the government regulations we created before, which was to fix some minor little problem. And it just snowballs out of control, and that's where we are now. And pretty much widely accepted, everybody at this point, and I'm talking liberals, conservatives, independents, everybody kind of is like, Obamacare, eh. The hard, die-hard political hacks are like, yeah, Obamacare is going to be great. But even the very liberal folks that know what's going on know this is not going to turn out well. Now, of course, those folks are pushing for single-payer system, which is, again, more regulation and more government trying to solve the previous round of more regulations and more government and so on and so forth and so on and so forth. But the problem is you're looking at it from the wrong perspective. It's not a matter of do we need to micromanage healthcare. It's a matter of how did we get here? What broke along the way? And how do we get back to a system that used to be affordable? How do we get back to a system that used to work? Now, I grant you that healthcare is far more complex now than it used to be, absolutely. But in theory, technology should be making things cheaper. In theory. Now, you can make the argument, well, people are living longer, so it costs more. Well, that's not a bad thing. I mean, hey, that means it's working, right? We're living longer. There has to be a way to keep those costs in check through the free market, not through regulations, not through government regulations that prevent care or cap care or try to decide who gets care. And my real concern, and we've talked about this on the show before, my real concern about Obamacare more than anything is now there's a financial incentive, more so than ever, to control the individual actions of others that may be considered risky behaviors. Because now everybody, as they say, has skin in the game. Well, now we want to be able to limit our costs, and by limiting our costs, that means we have to reduce the risk in others. And so suddenly we're going to end up in a system where now we have people that want to control individual behavior. And that those calls are going to come from the left and the right. I mean, they already do. But those calls will be amplified. You want to watch smoking bans kick into high gear? Don't want to. Trans fat bans, salt bans, all these bans are going to kick into high gear. They have to. Because now we're paying for everything. And what did that solve? It's still going to cost a lot of money because it's still heavily regulated. But we've also given up our liberty as well at the same time. So, all right, I'm going to take a break. Somebody keeps blinking on and off the queue that they want to talk, and then they disappear, and then they come back, and then they disappear. I don't know. Blog Talk is acting a little bit crazy tonight. So, anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, see if any of these callers want to talk. We'll let the callers talk if they do. And other than that, stick with us. You're listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. We'll be right back.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Hey, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And I should mention, if you want to advertise on the show or any of the shows, you can do so by emailing myviewmatters@aol.com. The prices are quite reasonable. So getting right to it here, as alluded to earlier, we now have David Patterson on the line. And David, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. Hello.
All right. So I guess I'd let the listeners know at the very beginning of the show that you had declared yesterday at Nothing Fancy Farm and went over a little bit about the events there yesterday. Is there anything in particular that you would like to talk about first?
Not at all. I just wanted to call in and say hello. And I guess I'll let you lead, and I'll be happy to talk about
anything.
That's
fine. No, that's quite all right. So I guess some of the main issues we hit on the show here quite often, it seems, because there's always news about them. Let's just start with Obamacare, since we kind of hammered the healthcare thing at the beginning. What's your vision, or what do you have an idea of where you would like to take healthcare?
Free market. The government doesn't have any place in healthcare. That they need to get their big toe out of it and let the market determine what's best for the people and the economy and everything else. And I think the less government regulation there is and the less government involvement, I think the better off we'll be.
Okay. And, I'm also was going to get to tonight, but we may or may not get to it now that you've cut in, that's okay. The economy has been kind of in the dumper for quite some time. And despite the fact that they claim unemployment keeps coming down, if you dig into the details of unemployment, what you see is that we're losing full-time jobs, and we're gaining part-time jobs. And the net effect is that, yeah, we're gaining two jobs for every one lost, but we're gaining two part-time jobs for every full-time job lost. And I guess the question is, is there something that you have as far as an idea on how to stop that trend, or is there something in particular that you have seen that may give us some insight into what direction you would like to go to try to bring full-time jobs back or at least stop the bleeding of the full-time jobs?
Well, and once again, I think that all ties into the same thing, Ken. We need less government involvement. If you open up the free market, let companies determine what's best for them, encourage competition, and, when you do that, get the government out of it. Competition is going to flourish. The economy is going to get better. People are going to hire because the economy is better. And they're not going to be looking to hire part-time people because they're going to have to worry about the whole Obamacare thing. They're going to be free to choose whatever healthcare program they want to for their employees. Get the government out of it.
And you do bring up a good point, and I've brought that up before, that a driving factor of why all this part-time employment is companies trying to skirt Obamacare, and that's what's kind of driving that move, at least from what I can see, towards that. I don't know. Let's do the NSA. How about that? Where do you stand on the NSA spying on American citizens?
I think it's deplorable. I think it's disgusting. I think that, don't get me wrong, the little people that are employed, they just have a job. They're just looking for, to take care of their families. This program, along with a great many others that have been implemented over the last little bit, pose a distinct threat to our freedom as individuals. And I think that the NSA is a very, very dangerous, it's just so dangerous.
Okay. Let me see here. And actually, I should go ahead and tell the chat room folks, if you guys want me to ask a particular question, feel free to pose that in the chat room. So I'm trying to think, I guess another just broad general question. Apparently the Middle East is once again, or still, I guess should say, in turmoil. And I guess my question is, what, if any, role do you see in us trying to be involved in that mess? That, and I think that's the best adjective you can give to that, is it's a mess at this point. And where do you see, you know, where would you go with trying to deal with the Middle East at this time?
Well, at the Middle East, it's pretty simple, and people may not agree with me, but here goes. Anytime you have a nation of people, regardless of how they're governed, whether it be by dictatorship or, you know, what have you, those people, if they are a sovereign nation, you know, they are their own state. And the United States, as much as I love my country, we have been sticking our big thumb into everybody else's business. And instead of letting them find their own path, we keep telling them, you need to be like us. You need to be like us. Well, of course, in opinion, we may want them to be like we used to be. But I don't think that we want any nation being like we are now. Our foreign policy needs to change so badly. We need to pull out and we need to give advice to these nations if they ask for it. We need to give assistance to these nations if they ask for it. And we need to stop going in and trying to let everybody know what the best way is, because our cultural differences may dictate that the best path for their country and for their culture is not the same as it is with ours. And if we keep forcing nations to, you know, maybe feel like they have to accept our help, it's just going to get worse. We're going to keep making enemies. The enemies that we make are going to take it out on us, the people. And, you know, it's just our foreign policy we've got to scale that back. It's just ridiculous.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a question that is fodder for libertarian communities or liberty-minded. Gold standard, yes or no, for money?
Absolutely. I'm still studying, but the you know, the dollar is still one of the best currencies on the planet. And, you know, it's still the standard by which a lot of countries base their, you know, their currency. But, you know, what a lot of them may not realize is that, you know, we just keep printing money. And, you know, whether we're printing it to pay off our debts or we're printing money to pay off the interest on the bonds that other countries buy from us and are hoping to make money off of. Either way, it's bad news. And I think that if in a truly free society and a truly free constitutional republic, if people want to trade services or want to trade some other form of currency other than the dollar, whether it be gold, silver, copper, whatever, you know, I don't think the government should stand in the way.
Okay. I guess one thing I was remiss to do at the very beginning, I should have had you give like an introduction of yourself, your bio, that kind of thing. So if you want to take a minute and tell people a little bit about yourself, that's probably a good idea. We probably should have started with that, but that's all right.
Oh, well, fair enough. I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. And I'm trying to filter through what we have time for. I went to Paul Blazer High School in Ashland, Kentucky. Shout out to the Tomcats. I attended Transylvania University for a year and then finished my degree at Eastern Kentucky University in police administration. And I've been a police officer for the last 17 years. During that time, I've started two small businesses, both of which were successful, but not successful enough for me to quit working and do it full time. And so, as a matter of fact, my last venture, I stopped doing because I had to repay city fees, county fees, Secretary of State wanted some money. Everybody wants money when you're trying to make a living. And it was more money than I was willing to dish out. Let's see.
On that point, and I know you're running for a federal office, but that is something that folks running for state office should realize is that under Ernie Fletcher several years ago, we had what was called the limited liability entity tax. Originally, it was called the alternative minimum tax, but that had such a bad connotation to it, they changed it to something big and confusing, the LLET. And essentially, that is, even if you don't make a profit, if you take income, right, even if it's in a loss for a small business, you still have to pay taxes. And, of course,
yep.
With all the fees, the occupation fees and the Secretary of State fees and the county fees and the state fees or the city fees, all these fees absolutely have a negative effect on having small businesses start up. And David, I know you've heard this before. I'm a huge advocate for small businesses, and they are the lifeblood of our communities and of our economy, for that matter. And so I guess that would lead me to a good question here. I don't mean to cut off your stuff, but what do you see as something that the federal government could do or could stop doing to help small businesses?
Oh, well, let's see. How about let's get rid of the tax system as we know it and institute something that exists.
And you broke up a little bit there, David. You said institute something what now?
Something that makes sense. The graduated income tax, you're making $30,000 a year and then you get a promotion or a raise and now you're making $60,000 a year. And what happens? You're penalized. You go into a higher tax bracket, and you're penalized because you were successful. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And, I'm a big fan in the last election, presidential election. As many people know, I was a big once they shunned Ron Paul out of it, I was a very big Gary Johnson supporter. And I absolutely love the idea of a consumption tax, a flat tax. And I won't go into that whole thing, but I think that if we follow that thought process, it really does make a whole lot of sense. And I would have a tendency to follow along those lines.
Okay. From the chat room here, we have do you have a specific plan to accomplish change if elected? And if so, what is it?
No, to be honest with you, at this point in time, I do not. I would love to sit here and fill you full of something that might sound good, but I'm sort of one of those straight up, I'm going to tell you the truth whether you like it or not, and the honest truth is no, I don't. I just know that the Republicans and the Democrats aren't getting it done. I plan on discussing this. I have at least 7 or 8 people that are incredibly informed that I plan on discussing multiple possibilities and coming up with a really, really positive platform that will hopefully do just that.
Okay. Let's see here. I know there was somebody on the queue, and I don't know if they want to come on or not. They specifically were calling because you were going to be on, apparently you had announced you were going to come on. So I'm going to bring him in, caller. You ready for this?
Sure.
hang on here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And see if they have any questions that they have would like to ask. Go ahead.
Yeah, great. Actually, I was just working on typing that I feel many of our fellow voters don't really they don't feel the empowering quality of being responsible for yourself. I mean, when it's always somebody else's fault, it means you're always the victim. If you're the victim, there's not really anything you can do about it. When your life sucks and it's your own damn fault, there's something you can do about that. And to me, this ties into libertarianism because, of course, if you give somebody freedom over themselves, for instance, what they smoke, what they eat, how much they exercise, then all of a sudden they're responsible for themselves. For that matter, if they're responsible for paying, oh, say, their own health care. So you get to eat at McDonald's, but that also means you have to pay for your diabetes medicine. I'm interested in if you feel I'm onto something, and if so, how do we help our fellow citizens understand that responsibility for yourself isn't a burden, it's empowering. It's what gives you the ability to rise to whatever level you want.
David, are you good to answer that? Are you there? Uh-oh.
He ran away.
We may have lost David. No, he was...
Oh, no.
He had dropped... Are you there?
Are you there?
David? There you are.
Are you there?
We can hear you
Hello?
Now.
Hello?
Can you...
Hello?
Can you hear us, David? We can hear you.
Can you hear me?
We can hear
Hello?
You.
Hello?
All right.
Hello?
David's apparently having problems. That's... sad.
That's a shame.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure he'll have an opportunity to answer that question. I'm going to drop him and force him to call back in since he can't hear. And I know we had talked in the break, and you had another question about or a statement about the litigation, so let's go over that real fast in the meantime, and maybe David can call back in and get a connection that works.
Cool. I think you expressed a little concern about your own opinion there, in that I think you sensed it was a hornet's nest, and I think it is, because the problem is, what can we do about frivolous lawsuits, in that who do we really trust to watch over frivolous lawsuits more than the courts and the juries? I mean, the only thing I would probably be okay with the idea of giving the courts better tools for dealing with frivolous lawsuits. That seems like a good idea. But to me, even though I'm sort of switching industries, it sort of reminds me of a post BP spill in the Gulf. Is there were people talking about removing the limit for liability in the case of oil spills. And I don't remember the details about it. I don't know if it was ocean oil spills or whatever. And I remember a prominent Republican on the air talking about, well, we can't just completely remove the limit. You know, we maybe need to up the limit, but we can't just remove the limit. Because if we remove the limit, then it becomes prohibitively expensive to drill in the Gulf. Now, I don't think that's necessarily true. I don't think it's true. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But let's assume for a moment that he's right, and it is prohibitively expensive to drill in the Gulf when you're going to have to be responsible for the damage you may do. Well, if that's true, then isn't it just prohibitively expensive to drill in the Gulf?
Right. And somebody's going to pick up the tab. I mean, somebody's going to have to pick up the tab in the case of an emergency and or a disaster. And I agree with you 100% there that, you know, liability – in the Gulf would have prevented that scenario because, and we've been over this on the show before, there's a bean counter in a back room somewhere that makes decisions and puts together graphs and charts of risk and reward and does all that work and presents it to management. Management goes, oh, okay, well, the most we can make is $1 billion and the most we can lose is $2 million. Okay, well, let's do it. I mean, that's a pretty good, you know, risk-reward ratio.
Exactly.
But it's all of a sudden – if all of a sudden they're responsible if they cost $3 billion in economic or environmental damage, then all of a sudden the $2 billion in possible upside doesn't seem so good anymore. And that,
right.
that again, it's self-correcting checks and balances. I see David's come back on here, and I'm going to try to bring him back in. David, are you here?
Yes, Verizon has seemingly graced me with a brief moment of cell service. I'm so sorry.
So I don't know how much of the previous question you had heard.
Was in the middle of his first sentence when I lost you. I didn't hear any of it. So I know it was
Carl,
I'm sorry.
Caller, can you just summarize very quickly, because we only have about 6 minutes left in the show. Can you summarize quickly the question you were asking?
Sure. I was basically expressing that I feel our fellow citizens fundamentally don't want to be responsible for themselves, because having to be responsible for themselves is kind of a downer. It's much easier to say my life isn't so good and it's someone else's fault, and they don't have an appreciation for how when you're responsible for yourself and your life being bad or good, whatever is your responsibility, then even when it's bad, you're not the victim, and there's something you can do about it. So when you're responsible for your bad situation, even though it's a bad situation, you're at least empowered because you're not the victim. And I was wondering how you feel about that. I was wondering if you feel that dovetails well with the libertarian message and what we can do to spread that.
Okay. Well, that was a lot. Let me see if I process it correctly. First of all, yes, personal responsibility is something that, you know, a lot of Americans have gotten away from. It's not my fault, it's somebody else's fault. I'm a police officer. I've been a police officer for the last 17 years. I see it almost every day. This isn't my fault. I was, you know, for whatever reason, I did this and it led me to this. When the reality is that we should, you know, we're all responsible for our own actions. We've all made poor decisions. We've all made mistakes. And the best way for us to learn is to say, okay, I messed up. What do I need to take away from this? And the libertarian message is that we need to lead by example, especially our members of Congress, you know, our leaders at the state level. We have to make the right decisions, and we have to lead by example so that our people know that they are voting for the right leadership. As far as people, you know, you're right. You're totally right. We have gotten, a lot of our people have gotten into a habit of throwing the blame off on whoever, you know, whoever they can. And the only way we're going to fix that is by education and making sure that we show everyone that we're willing to lead from the top down if we have to.
Well, and you're not saying, and David, I'll ask, you're not saying top down as far as forcing the responsibility onto folks, but showing them that from the top down, responsibility at the top leads to people, if you want to say down, seeing that it can be done and what it can do. Or am I
yes.
wrong in saying
that? It gives, you know, it gives everybody an alternate, maybe an alternate viewpoint. You know, a lot of people, we've been enough generations in that a lot of people may not even know the difference. They may not know that is a way. And as a matter of fact, they may have been conditioned through their upbringing that it's okay to be that way. So hopefully, what we can do is reach enough people to make a change. Oh gosh, I probably should have said that. That sounded awfully Obama, didn't it? you know what I mean, though.
And guys, I apologize. We only have a couple minutes left, and so I'm going to put you guys back on the hold. And I want to thank you guys for calling in. David, thank you for calling in, and welcome to electoral politics. I've done it. Oh, not a problem at all. And anytime you want to call back in, you're always welcome to do so, as is any other candidate or anybody else for that matter. The last thing we touched on was talking, David mentioned something about multiple generations And one of the things at Nothing Fancy Farm that was there, Mike Johnston gave a great speech about the inner city and how, you know, when he first got into trying to minister to people in the inner city, they used to come and say, man, I don't think I'm going to make it past 25. I don't think I'm going to make it past 24. And now, you know, years later, people are coming to him and saying, man, I don't know if I'm going to make it past 16. I don't know if I'm going to make it past 17. And he brought out the point that voting the way they've always voted in the inner city has not brought them out of their condition, does not improve their condition. And it's time for them to look for a better solution. And that's not a unique answer just for the inner city. We also, in the burbs and in the country and throughout America, can't continue to vote the way we've always voted. We need to vote smarter. And I think that's what we're seeing. I think that's what we're seeing in this wave of liberty that is coming over America, the wave of libertarianism that's out there, is that we have the opportunity to show people that there is a better way, to lead by example, as David said. It's up to us, and it's up to us to keep fighting, and it's not always easy. A lot of times it's very hard to keep doing this. None of us are paid, as I said, but it's worth it. Because in the long run, we're better off for it as a country and for our children and our future. At the end of the show, folks, thanks for tuning in. If you're not here live, you can always catch the podcast. But tune in live, 7 p.m. every Sunday. We're here. Thanks for tuning in on the My View Matters Radio Network. See you all next week. Have a good week.